WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Tonight at Avery Fisher Hall in New York, an all-star cast including Paul Newman, Julia Roberts, Meryl Streep, and Morgan Freeman will perform an adaptation of Ernest Hemingway's Nick Adams stories. The adaptation was written in 1957 by A.E. Hotchner. Hotchner became Hemingway's friend, associate, and biographer. Tonight's production is a benefit for a summer camp for children with cancer founded by Hotchner and Paul Newman. I spoke with Hotchner about Hemingway. I asked him to read a few of his favorite Hemingway sentences, and he chose the opening of A Farewell to Arms.
In the late summer of that year, we lived in a house in a village that looked across the river and the plain to the mountains. In the bed of the river there were pebbles and boulders, dry and white in the sun, and the water was clear and swiftly moving and blue in the channels. Troops went by the house and down the road, and the dust they raised powdered the leaves of the trees. The trunks of the trees, too, were dusty, and the leaves fell early that year, and we saw the troops marching along the road, and the dust rising, and leaves, stirred by the breeze, falling, and the soldiers marching, and afterwards the road bare and white, except for the leaves.
Now, what's quintessential Hemingway about that?
Notice the simplicity of the language that's used and the almost poetic repetition. It's almost as if it's poetry. You could scan that, I'll bet, and you would find that it has a scan to it. But the realism of it, when I first read that, I could feel the autumn in the air. I could feel leaves falling, and there was a brook rushing outside. He transports you into the area with a minimum of description so that you furnish some of the description. That's the great gift that he had, that he brought to American literature. That was his skill. That was the spareness.
At some point, you asked Hemingway if you should do like he did and move to Paris to test yourself, to see if you could be, you know, if you could write a great novel there. And what advice did Hemingway give you?
He said, you know, nobody knows what is in him, if anything, until he gives it a try. So one of two things can happen. You can find to your benefit that you have good stuff in you, and that what comes out is something that you can be proud of, you can deal with, so forth. But, he said, you run the risk that there may be nothing in you, or what's in you is inadequate, and what's in you will be a big disappointment to you. And it could very well crack you for the rest of your life. So that's your risk. I mean, it's a gamble. So if you go there thinking that you've got the right stuff and you haven't, then how are you going to deal with it? And if you have, then how are you going to deal with it?
So did you stay home after that?
I went.
You went?
Oh, yeah. I've always felt that the only thing that you have to regret are the things you didn't do.
Hemingway had a lot of interesting things to say about writing, and I thought I'd read one of those things, and this is from his posthumously published book, A Movable Feast, which you gave the title to. And this is about trying to write in the 20s. And he says, when he's in Paris, and he says, I would stand and look out over the roofs of Paris and think, do not worry, you have always written before and you will write now. All you have to do is write one true sentence, write the truest sentence that you know. So finally, I would write one true sentence and then go on from there. It was easy then because there was always one true sentence that I knew or had seen or had heard someone say. If I started to write elaborately or like someone introducing or presenting something, I found that I could cut that scroll work or ornament out and throw it away and start with the first true simple declarative sentence I had written. I like the idea of throwing away the ornamentation and realizing when he was sounding too presentational. Did you get a sense of that ever from observing him write or hearing him talk about that?
He told me that he really picked up on that business of editing out from Gertrude Stein, because he had had an introduction to her and her salon from Sherwin Anderson had given him a letter of introduction. And he had subsequently shown her one of his stories. They weren't selling and they were all being rejected. And she had said, "Hemingway, take this back and just remove all of the varies that are in there, the word very. Don't use any of the very. Not very late or very beautiful. Take all the varies out." So he said, "I picked the varies like you pick berries. I picked the varies." And he said, and it strengthened it a lot. And then Scott Fitzgerald, in the story 50 Grand, which was one of the first stories that he sent to Maxwell Perkins for him, he said, "Hemingway, you don't need the first paragraph. Cut it out." And he said, "I learned from those early experiences, the more you leave out, the stronger you can get. If what you've got is substance and you just want to trim away all the curlicues that don't mean anything." So I think that he had good teachers along the way.
One of the most famous war injuries in literature is in The Sun Also Rises,
right,
where the main character, Jake Barnes, has had his penis blown off.
Yeah.
And is unable to make love and therefore to consummate the relationship with the woman he loves. What did Hemingway tell you that character's injury was based on?
I think it was based probably on his own injury when he, as an 18-year-old volunteer ambulance driver in the Italian War, suffered a grievous wound in his leg. His knee was really blown off in a trench, and he had to recuperate in the hospital in Milan, where he met Agnes von Kierowski, whom he had an affair with in the hospital. I think that was a searing event, and I think he simply transferred that terrible wound to Jake Barnes, a private part. But I think he realized what that would mean, and I think was a playoff from that. From everything that we ever discussed, I would come with that conclusion.
He told you that shortly after writing The Sun Also Rises that he was unable to make love. He said he felt as if he might as well have been Jake Barnes at that point. What happened to him?
That was very funny, because he had, during his marriage to Hadley, he had fallen into an affair with Pauline. And Pauline had come to visit them, and after he married Pauline there, he then found that he had this terrible impotence, which he said got transferred from having written about Jake Barnes. So he said he tried a variety of remedies, and none of it. There was one guy had electrodes that he attached to him, and he drank calf's liver juice and all that sort of calf's liver blood. And finally, Pauline suggested that maybe he should go to the local church down the street and pray. And Ernest said, "Well, he really felt like a damn fool praying to the Virgin Mary for an erection, but at any rate, he did this." And then he came back to the room, the little place that he had with Pauline. Pauline was in bed, and he said, "And we made love like we invented it." And he said, "And that's when I became a Catholic."
Did he stay a Catholic?
No. Then he always referred to himself as a failed Catholic.
A quick failure.
Yeah, right.
A.E. Hotchner recorded in 1999. Tonight, his adaptation of Hemingway's Nick Adams stories will be performed by an all-star cast at Avery Fisher Hall in New York. This is Fresh Air.